This is Conor Lennon from UN News. Transnational crime is a growing risk that's posing a major challenge to police forces, including UN police. And conflict zones are providing the opportunity for organised crime to make profits estimated at over $30 billion every year. During UN Police Week, I met with Tuesday Reitano. She's the Deputy Director of the Global Initiative Against Transnational Crime. This was set up in 2013 to help the UN and other multilateral organisations improve their strategies for combating this emerging and dangerous phenomenon. Speaking to her ahead of her address to the Security Council on Tuesday, which was delivered during the annual briefing by UN peacekeeping operations, I began by asking her to go through some of the reasons that transnational organised crime is a growing risk.
First of all, the globalisation of trade, but also globalisation of telecommunications, cybercrime, particularly the way that the internet had enabled illicit markets to span continents and create anonymous safe havens, was really putting pressure on national police officers who are very much bounded by their borders. So it was felt then that we needed a different set of responses, and the multilateral system and a states-based response wasn't working very well.
Okay, so I mean, transnational crime is not new, obviously, neither is organised crime. There are organisations like Interpol, which have been around for a long time, but it was felt that the current systems in place weren't up to scratch given the current situation.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there were all of those organisations, but in some ways, they were also still responding and adapting. And one of the challenges for states-led organizations was that there's a socioeconomic underpinning to illicit markets that was creating sometimes a legitimacy that was favored crime more than states. And we were also seeing a growing convergence between illicit flows and political actors, which meant essentially corruption, but that corruption was undermining the criminal justice system to be effective.
We're speaking during UN Police Week on the day that you're briefing to the Security Council. What's your connection to the United Nations and to UN Police in particular?
Part of the reason the Global Initiative was set up was to help the multilateral institutions to respond. One of the challenges of a member states-led discussion is that, of course, you always have to keep your institutional hat on. What civil society can do in this area is allow people to take them off and to discuss, either with like-minded or with more challenging entities, a way to support a multilateral decision. So we do a lot of dialogue, both public and private, which bridges multilaterals with policing agencies, but also with civil society, with the private sector, which allows a sort of different paradigm to be shifted. And then that allows perhaps a better conversation once it moves back into the UN system.
And bringing experts, bringing civil society into the conversation, is this a new thing, or has this been... this has been going on for a long time.
I mean, there aren't any other civil society organisations that are dedicated exclusively to organised crime, though they are now growing in connection with, say, corruption or in response to natural resource governance. It's quite a contested space still for civil society actors. I mean, I don't think, while there have been some experiments, certainly on policing to cooperate with NGOs on something like wildlife crime, for example, there are a lot of very active NGOs that track wildlife crime, that try and present evidence to a police body. But there isn't a good mechanism by which the police say, well, we will accept the evidence that's presented that we haven't gathered ourselves. So there's a frontier, I think, where a lot of dialogue is taking place. And similarly, you know, if you take, for example, this just last week, a big flagship moment in the history of the UN Transnational Organized Crime Convention was to agree a review mechanism by which implementation of that convention, which is very highly ratified, after 15 years of its institution, has never had a mechanism by which progress could be monitored. And one of the most contentious issues preventing that review mechanism being created was whether or not civil society should be part of that. Because essentially, is there a role for civil society to judge the performance of states?
And your answer would be yes.
I'm not sure it's a question of judging, but certainly contributing. So what we see is that the perspective of the illicit economy, organized crime, criminal markets, sometimes looks very different when you take it from the perspective of an individual than when you take it from the perspective of a state. So in a lot of countries, the illicit economy presents more resilience opportunities for them, for their livelihoods, for their families, for their individual life chances than the state is providing. I mean, migration and human smuggling, which is obviously a huge issue now on the political spectrum, the ability of somebody who wants to move to use a smuggler to get what they want to go, they consider that a positive thing. Whereas from the perspective of states, smuggling is definitely bad.
Now, what are the key messages you want to get across to the Security Council today?
Well, today in the Security Council, we're speaking specifically on the issue of how policing and policing functions and organized crime intersect in conflict spaces. So what we've seen is that as the global illicit economy has grown, commensurate to global trade and global economic activity in the legitimate space, conflict zones have been a real node in that movement, that they have become a place where enormous amount of resources are generated for transnational organized crime networks. So we recently launched a study with Interpol and with a Norwegian NGO called RIPTO, the Global Center for Analysis, and found that some $32.5 billion is being generated out of criminal activity in conflict zones every year. We're talking about here sort of trafficking in environmental products, oil, fuel, gold, but also human trafficking and smuggling, kidnapping for ransom, for example.
And is this a crime that is being perpetrated by the actors in these conflicts, or is it because institutions are broken down? There's this grey area where criminals find it easier to operate.
It's actually both. So in part, I mean, obviously every conflict is different and every sort of framework is different, but essentially conflict actors are profiting from taxing illicit flows or generating natural resources which they can then sell on. But you also see political actors in that space, whether they're, you know, the ones who are more legitimate within, say, elected officials who are using illicit financial flows to support their own party politics, whether it's opposition political actors who are using access to the illicit economy to challenge the control by the parties in power. And then all of that is also netting into international, transnational organized crime networks who are often facilitating the taking of the value of these commodities to market.